I wanna get locked up tonight. Listen to Rob Ross and get rock on my on the only podcast that I'll hear. Rip off my ears. Oh, the rock show, 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 the rock show. Oh, I want the rock show.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to The Rock Show. I am Rocker Mike. We're at episode 195. This is Rob Rossi to your left right there. Hello, Rob. How are you?
I'm pretty good. So this is the 195 show. We're like five more before we reach 200. What are we going to do for the 200 show, man?
I think we have to have a special live show with clowns and sword swallowers and people pounding nails into their tongues. What do you think?
That sounds spectacular.
Yeah, we got to do something. We'll surprise everybody. But this is episode 195, and today it's the second part of our Black History Month shows. Last episode was about Motown living legend Smokey Robinson.
Yeah.
This week we got somebody that you might know the name, you might not, but he is extremely important. Another fellow African American named Berry Gordy. Okay. Berry Gordy is the founder of Motown. And without him, there'd be no Motown. So he's very important in the whole scheme of things in rock and roll. We all know how influential Motown was to rock and roll music, particularly, you know, a lot of bands in the 60s, like the Stones and the Beatles, look to Motown. A person that you may not think was a big Motown fan was John Bonham from Led Zeppelin. In fact, his particular style of drumming was very funky, like Motown drumming was. Okay. You might not think of it that way, but drummers will tell you that. And he also admitted that he listened to Tamla Motown music constantly. So Berry Gordy is still alive. He's 94 years old to this date. And he has a pretty incredible story, and I'm ready to start. Should I begin?
Yeah, I also want to say that I saw the musical, the Motown.
Oh, you did see that. I didn't see that.
It was fantastic. It was really good, but it was really... There was really talk about like the 1960s, like him marrying Diane Ross and everything that went on, and Smokey Robinson having issue in Marvin Gaye. Like, and it went to the point they even had the Jackson 5, they had the Cream. But the interesting thing, it was, you remember that reunion show they did for Motown, whatever, like the 20th anniversary or something?
In the 80s, I think.
In the 80s, the whole show focused on that reunion, if he was going to show up or not show up.
Did he show?
He did show at the end, but because...
I kind of remember, yeah.
He's like a very controversial figure, like, because, you know, some people loved him, some people hated him. Like, he was very infamous for doing some good stuff, but he was also doing some really horrible things.
He did some underhanded business things, I'm sure. Yeah.
The whole thing is revolving about the history of Motown and then that reunion show. I think it was on TV. I remember seeing it.
I'm remembering it now as you bring it up, and I remember them. They didn't know if he was going to be on the show. I do remember that. Yeah. Because they, you know, there was people there that weren't too happy, you know, around him. I guess I'm not sure.
It's insane. Yeah, but yeah, he showed up, and you know what? It was what it was, you know, for that. But it was very interesting to see the reaction, and just like he was very well, received, but it was also under a lot of clouds and controversy, because the guy was a very controversial figure, yes. But he was also a genius in seeing people and what they were worth.
Well, you know, what Motown, the theme of it was he wanted to bring black music to white audiences.
Yeah.
And as I said in the last episode a little bit, in the beginning of the last episode, this was like, you know, the stars were lining up at this point, okay, in the late 50s for this to happen. Their racial barriers were broken, okay, were crumbling. And we were looking at, for the first time, black music coming into the white charts, okay? People like Elvis, who were white, influenced by black music.
Yep.
Other people in the mid 50s on Sun Records and that definitely had, you know, they came before Motown. They definitely had a hand in taking down those racial barriers. But Motown really did something that none of them did. And that was just brought this black music by black artists. Yes. And a lot of female black artists too.
But
okay,
you want to hear something funny? Elvis had a little problem because they thought that Elvis's music was black music. So there were some places that they wouldn't even let him
perform,
because they were like, "Oh, you're doing this race music, which we don't like."
Yes, it was, you know, earlier before Elvis's time in '55 when he came out. You know, that stuff, R&B was called race music. I hate that word, but it's just true. Okay, that's what they called it. But the point I'm making is between 1955 and when Motown started and became popular by the late 50s, early 60s, things had changed in that short period of time. And it just was a perfect time. The stars were lined up to have this music by black artists, male, female groups, whatever. Okay. Be focused to white audiences, and white audiences ate it up.
Yeah.
They loved it. And of course, people on the other side of the pond in England and the rest of Europe were listening to this. And I think they even liked it more than in America. Okay. It influenced them to make the music that they would make. And, you know, remember when the Beatles came out and the Stones came out, you know, they came out of an R&B scene in England, okay, which was influenced by American R&B. So there you go. It goes full circle. Yep, there's Berry Gordy and Diana with that beautiful head of hair right there.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so Berry Gordy, also known as Berry Gordy III, was born on November 28th, 1929 in Detroit. Another Detroit legend. Okay. Yes. He is the seventh of eight children altogether by his parents. Originally, his family was from Georgia and they relocated in the early 1920s to Detroit. Okay. His grandfather was named Berry Gordy I, and he was the son of James Gordy, a white plantation owner in Georgia, and one of his slaves. Berry the First's half-brother, James, son of the elder James and his legal wife, was the grandfather of President Jimmy Carter.
Wow.
So you have a connection there.
Yeah. Okay.
Berry Gordy II was led to Detroit both by the job opportunities offered by the automotive industry, which was booming at that point, and also by worries of what was going on in the Jim Crow South. In Georgia was a hotbed of Ku Klux Klan activity. In the first 20 years of the 20th century, 1,502 lynchings were reported, almost all of them in the southern states. Gordy's father opened a grocery store in Detroit, owned a plastering company, and a carpentry business, and a printing shop. While his brothers Fuller and George were happy to work at jobs their father assigned to them in construction and printing. Barry and Robert, the younger brother, were less inclined to do that. Robert and Barry liked music. They liked dancing. But particularly Barry's greatest interest at that point was in boxing. Barry, the young Barry. Okay. Right. Now, Gordy dropped out of Northeastern High School in the 11th grade to become a professional boxer. Now, you know, obviously, if that had happened, there'd be no Motown. Okay. But he became a professional boxer in hopes of becoming rich quickly. He boxed professionally until 1950. When he got drafted by the Army, okay, and went to the Korean War. Arriving in Korea in May 1952, Barry Gordy was first assigned to the 58th Field Artillery Battalion, 3rd Infantry Division near Panmunjom, Korea. He later became a chaplain's assistant, driving a Jeep and playing the organ at religious services at the front. His tour in the Korean War was completed in April of 1953. He then would obtain a GED diploma, which is also known as good enough diploma. Okay. Get his high school diploma in that GED way. Now, after his return from Korea in 1953, he married the 19-year-old Thelma Louise Coleman in Toledo, Ohio. Gordy then developed his interest in music, which he always had. He started writing songs. He worked at a 3D record mart, okay, it was called, which is was a record store featuring jazz music and 3D glasses, which were very big deal in the 1950s.
Yeah.
The store was kind of unsuccessful. Gordy sought work at the Lincoln Mercury plant, which everybody did in if you lived in Michigan. But his family connections put him in touch with Al Green. Now, we're not talking about the Al Green. It's a different person. Okay. All right. Now, he was the owner of the Flame Show Bar Talent Club, where he met at that place, Barry met singer Jackie Wilson. In 1957, Jackie Wilson recorded the song Riet Petit, which was co-written by Gordy and his sister Gwen. Okay. It was also written and produced, co-written and produced by Billy Davis. Billy Davis would go on to be in the Fifth Dimension and all that stuff. Married to Marilyn McCoo. Okay. It became a modest hit, did well, but had more success internationally, especially in the UK, where it reached the top 10. And it even later topped the charts in 1986 as a reissue. Jackie Wilson recorded 6 more songs co-written by Gordy over the next 2 years, including Lonely Teardrops, which topped the R&B charts and got to number 7 in the pop charts. The Gordy siblings and Billy Davis also wrote All I Could Do Was Cry for Etta James over at Chess Records. So this is, you know, he was already writing for people pre-Motown.
Yeah, pre-Motown. So he's helping artists already. So
right.
He probably went, I'm pretty good at this. Let me get some people under my wing.
Yeah, well, you know, I need my own label, basically. Okay? So what he would do is...
Hey, Mike, in that Motown, were they living all like in one house or it was a recording studio?
It was a recording studio. It was called Hitsville, USA.
Yeah.
Okay? And no, they didn't live there. I mean, I guess maybe some of them at times stayed at... Yeah, I don't know. Okay? But it wasn't like that kind of a setup,
okay.
You know. Now, Gordy would reinvest the profits from his songwriting successes and put it into producing. So in 1957, he discovered the Miracles. We talked about that in the last show, Smokey Robinson, and began building a portfolio of successful artists. In 1959, with the encouragement of Miracles leader Smokey Robinson, Gordy borrowed $800 from his family to create an R&B record company. Originally, Gordy wanted to name the label Tammy Records after the song recorded by Debbie Reynolds. However, that name was already taken, and he chose the name Tamla Records. The company began operating on January 12, 1959, Come to Me by Marv Johnson was issued as Tamla 101, first single. Okay. United Artists would pick up Come to Me for national distribution, as well as Johnson's more successful follow-up records, such as You Got What It Takes, which was co-produced by Gordy. Okay. He also received a co-writer credit, though the song was originally written and recorded by guitarist Bobby Parker for VJ Records a year and a half earlier. Gordy's next release was the only 45 ever issued on his Raber label, featuring Wade Jones with an unnamed female backup group. The record didn't sell well and is now one of the rarest issues from the Motown stable. Berry's third release was called Bad Girl by the Miracles, the first release as Motown. So Tamla became Motown. All right. Yeah. And that was a solid hit.
What's that? Mike, let's get this right. He started Motown with $800.
Yeah. Which actually, it's interesting. If you convert it to today, it's about $8,000.
But you couldn't even start a record company with $8,000 today. This guy started a record company.
You couldn't start it with $8,000. You couldn't start it with $80,000.
With $800. That is, to me, that blows my mind.
Yeah. I mean, well, that's a inflation for you. I don't know. I mean, it is mind-boggling. But the third release was called Bad Girl, and that was the first release officially under Motown. It was a solid hit in 1959 because Chess Records picked it up. Okay. Barrett Strong's Money, That's What I Want. You know that song.
Yeah.
Initially appeared on Tamla Records and then charted on a sister label that Gordy had called Anna Records in February of 1960. It was the Miracles who gave the label its first million-selling hit single with the 1960 smash Shop Around, and the song and its follow-up You Really Got a Hold on Me, also Mickey's Monkey, What's So Good About Goodbye, and I'll Try Something New, all were put out on Motown and they were huge hits. So them, you know, the Miracles,
yeah,
really were like, you know, we'll put it over the top.
They're pretty much the one that set up the company for success, you know. People say, oh, the Miracles for Motown, what else do you got to offer?
Exactly. So the Tamla and Motown labels, they were side by side. Okay. Eventually Tamla would go away, but Motown and Tamla was side by side. They then would merge, okay, into a new company called Motown Record Corporation. That happened on April 14th, 1960. Later in 1960, Gordy signed an unknown singer named Mary Wells, who became the new label's second star with Smokey Robinson. Now, he wrote songs for her, You Beat Me to the Punch, Two Lovers, and My Guy. Okay. All right. And, of course, he wrote My Girl also for the Temptations. Yeah. So the Miracles' hit Shop Around peaked at number one in the national R&B charts in late 1960 and at number two on the Billboard pop charts, okay? And it established Motown as a legitimate label that could have hits. And, you know, it was a black run label, which was not common at the time. So later in 1961, the Marvelettes would record Please Mr. Postman. And that made it to the top of the R&B and the pop.
That was another catchy song.
Oh, yeah. Again, and that's another song covered by the Beatles.
Yeah, it's okay. Amazing.
Yeah. You know, I mean, people were listening to this stuff. And it was changing popular music in real time as it went on.
Did this make black music more available, like for radios and to more white people? You know?
Absolutely. I mean, think about how business works. If you have a hit, okay, and then somebody else wants to do the same thing, they're gonna look at that and say, well, he did this and this works, so I could sign this band, this black band that maybe I wouldn't sign if this other one wasn't a hit. Okay. Yes. You know, and it created a scene. Okay. And really there's nothing like it been ever since. I guess rap music you could lump in there too, but I think this was really quite a unique set of circumstances because it was so groundbreaking from a racial perspective, and also just
itself. You also got to remember the time. It was that weird time that, you know, it was shifting for, this was getting more, it was getting more, what's it called? It was getting more like, what's the word?
Integrated,
but it was also getting introduced to a wider audience, and they probably accepted it a lot easier.
Oh, yeah.
It was getting a lot more acceptance. That's what I meant by...
Exactly. I mean, this stuff was selling in the white Billboard pop charts.
Yeah, which
is... Where a lot of R&B acts couldn't really break through. Okay? That's why you had separate charts.
Yeah, but think about it. You have the people running... The people in the music were blacks and English. The British invasion and
The British invasion was a couple of years away at this point. But
I mean, think about what it was. It went from black music to English invasion. It's not really like Americans.
Well, you bring up the British invasion, okay? Well, all they did, from the Beatles to the Stones and everybody else that followed, is they took black American music, absorbed it into their own style, and spit it right back at us.
Yeah, it's okay? Crazy.
And they saved, the British invasion saved rock and roll. Okay. If you look at the timelines, you know, when Elvis was around in 55, Chuck Berry, Johnny Cash, all these guys, Johnny Cash was crossover between country and rock and roll. You know, that kind of Jerry Lee Lewis, that kind of died by 1960. Elvis went to the army. The other stuff went in different directions. They went in more country. Jerry Lee Lewis had the scandal with his cousin, marrying his cousin.
Okay. Yeah.
Rock and roll all of a sudden got like pussified. All right.
Yeah.
You had acts like Fabian and stuff like that. That was like, you know, Frankie Avalon. I mean, that stuff's okay, but it just really, it wasn't rock and roll.
No.
And it kind of like Motown added, you know, a punch to that. And then what the British invasion did by 64 was really just spit it right back at us. And then nothing was ever the same after that. But Motown it's the influence that they had, particularly on the British scene, it can't be underestimated in any way. I mean, it's huge, you know. So Berry Gordy, by this point in 1960, was bringing a lot of talent together. He was also creating like a public image for Motown that was great. I mean, people were paying attention. The bands looked great. They dressed great. You know, it was really like put together very well.
You know what? A lot of bands still follow this format, even to today.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look at this. Over the next decade, through the 60s, Berry Gordy signed artists like the Supremes, Marvin Gaye, the Temptations, Jimmy Ruffin, the Contours, the Four Tops, Gladys Knight and the Pips, the Commodores, the Velvettes, Martha and the Vandellas, Stevie Wonder, and the Jackson 5.
Wow.
How much music came out of that?
A lot of music.
I mean,
that's a who's of musicians, you know?
right. Now, one thing he did as a side note, Berry Gordy, is in the early 70s, I believe it was. Maybe it might have been late 60s. I think it was early 70s. He made a label, kind of like a side label of it was Motown. But it was going to be for white acts, okay? And he signed a white act called Rare Earth, okay? Which, you listen to these guys, you'd think they were black, okay? And they were like a rock band that covered some Motown songs. Like, they did a great version of the Temptations' Get Ready, okay? I had that single as a kid.
Get Ready?
Yeah. I had that single. I think I still have it as out of 45 as a kid. But, you know, everything was what he was interested in doing was very carefully controlling the image of the artists. Okay. How they dressed in public, you know, their manners, the choreography. You think of the choreography of the Temptations, for instance. Okay. All that was from Berry Gordy and people he had working for him to keep this image. And it I don't want to say it was a squeaky clean image, because these bands had issues that yeah. you know, would make it to the public knowledge. For instance, Temptations and, you know, Ruffian and his drug problems and
yeah.
things like that. That would make its way out, but it didn't damage Motown. It didn't.
Yeah.
Okay? They kind of rised above it, rose above it, I should say, and still had this kind of like clean image with these unbelievably talented acts. Where he got all these people? I mean, they were really, most of them were out of Detroit.
Dude, the guy did a machine. The guy started like this freaking pop, freaking hit machine that he just kept making bands or getting groups. Or,
yeah.
And he also sold people right away. He knew if they were talented and be like, okay, I'll take you. So you know what? He had a great ear for music and just the visual alone, you know?
Right. And he would take chances too. Like Mary Wells was unknown. Yeah. Nobody knew who she was. She had very little experience. But she had such a beautiful voice. Smokey fell in love with it. Smokey probably was very influential, I would guess, in having her signed. Okay. Because they were working together, Smokey and Berry, on finding acts and all that. Times would change by the early 1970s. Gordy would relocate Motown out of Detroit and move it to Los Angeles.
Yeah, okay. That was weird.
Motown
here in Los Angeles.
People were very surprised by that move, and it had a lot of impact on the industry. You know, obviously taking that industry out of Detroit hurt Detroit. Okay, but everything was going to California in those days. The Tonight Show went from New York to California. You know, Motown moved. You know, it just seemed like California was the place to be at that time. So, and it was easier because of the weather. People liked living there. They were living there, and they just, nobody wanted to go to frozen Detroit in January and record.
Yeah, you know? So that was interesting that they moved there. But they were probably still doing stuff in Motown anyway, and he kept both places, right?
I think there was a small presence in Detroit for a while, but eventually it would all move to California.
Wow.
Now, one of the first things he did is he produced the biopic about Billie Holiday.
Yeah.
Called Lady Sings the Blues. That starred Diana Ross. It's a great movie, holds up even to this day. Billy Dee Williams, okay, is in this movie. Richard Pryor is in this movie. Okay. Yeah. Gordy wanted this film made, and he got a little opposition to start. Okay. But with his tenacity and his good business skills, he got this film made. Billy Dee Williams wasn't the original choice. Originally, they were going to use Levi Stubbs from the Tops. Billy Dee Williams would be the love interest in that movie for Billie Holiday. That success of that film, which is a great movie, would kind of parlay into his next film project, which was called Mahogany. Okay. Tony Richardson was the original director of Mahogany, which also stars Diana Ross. Okay. And Billy Dee Williams again. And Berry Gordy had a very hands-on approach with this film. He ended up firing Tony Richardson as the original director and took over as himself, okay, to direct the film. Now, in 1985, Berry Gordy also produced, you remember this, in 1985, he produced The Last Dragon.
That was a great movie.
Yeah, Vanity was in that, remember?
Yeah.
Yeah. Martial artist Tamak, remember him?
Yeah. You think he moved there to start making movies more than music?
I think he had that in his mind to branch Motown out into film. Okay, Diana Ross was beautiful. She was loved by everybody. she had some acting skills. She's you know, she actually was nominated for an Academy Award for Lady Sings the Blues. She didn't win, but you know, she would make a couple of movies over the years, most notably The Wiz.
The Wiz, yeah, that's the one with Michael Jackson.
Yeah. You know, that was a cool movie. You know, and she was popular, so you know, he wanted to parlay this, you know, this music scene into a film thing, definitely. So moving out there probably was part of that idea. So through the 1970s and 80s, Motown would continue to produce major hits. The Jacksons, no longer the Jackson 5, the Jacksons, yes. Okay. Rick James would be on Motown, the Commodores. Lionel Richie, obviously, solo from the Commodores, would be on Motown. Stevie Wonder, Smokey Robinson would still be on Motown. But by the 1980s, the label wasn't exactly what it was, except for its few huge artists that it had.
Yeah.
They would sell, Gordy would sell his interests to MCA and also Boston Ventures, okay, on June 28th, 1988. For $61 million.
Wow.
Okay, which if you put it in 2023 numbers, it's about $130 million.
But think about it, in 1983, getting offered $61 million, that's a huge deal, man.
Yeah, that's over, in today's prices, it's over $100 million.
Yeah, it's crazy. So
he later sold most of his interests in Joe Beat Publishing to EMI Publishing. Gordy wrote or co-wrote 240 of the approximately 15,000 songs in Motown's Joe Beat music catalog.
Wow.
However, the true test of the label's worth would come a few years later when PolyGram paid over $330 million for the Motown catalog. Diana Ross was given shares in this version of the label. Okay. So she made a shitload of money.
She made a lot of money.
I mean, you know, that's just insane. Okay.
A bunch of money, but while the Supremes were starving.
Yeah. Well, that's true. That's true. That's all, you know, it's a whole other story. Berry Gordy won a lot of awards. Okay. He was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1988. In 1993, he received the CBC Lifetime Achievement Awards. He was inducted into the Junior Achievement U.S. Business Hall of Fame in 1998, wow. The Michigan Rock and Roll Legends Hall of Fame in 2009. He received the Songwriters Hall of Fame Pioneer Award in June of 2013. He was actually the first living individual to ever receive that award. And in 2014, Gordy received the Key to the City from Mike Dugan on October 22nd, 2014. That would be Detroit, okay? In 2016, Gordy received the National Medal of Arts from President Obama for helping to create a trailblazing new sound in American music, okay? Continuing on, there is a Berry Gordy Square that exists in Los Angeles. Okay, on the corner of Sunset Boulevard and the Argyle, where the office of Motown was located. In 2021, he was awarded the Kennedy Center Honors Award. 2022, he was inducted into the Black Music and Entertainment Walk of Fame. And in 2022, he was also awarded an honorary doctorate from the University of Michigan. Okay.
That's a lot of accolades, a lot of awards.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he had a lot of accolades, a lot of great things said about him. A couple of quotes here. Let me see. Well, Marvin Gaye, unfortunately, when he was killed, Berry Gordy declared Marvin Gaye the greatest of his time. Okay. Berry said the singer had no musical equals, while also discussing how he carried on the legacy of other soul singers who tackled a range of themes from love to civil rights, like Billie Holiday. So, you know, him talking about one of his acts. On March 20th, 2009, Gordy was in Hollywood to pay tribute to his first group and first million-selling act, The Miracles. when the members received a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Speaking in tribute to the group, Gordy said, without the miracles, Motown would not be the Motown it is today. And that's true.
That's 100% true.
Now, at the age of 79, Gordy spoke at the memorial service for Michael Jackson in Los Angeles, July 7th, 2009. He suggested that the King of Pop was perhaps not the best description for Jackson in light of his achievements, referring to him instead as the greatest entertainer that ever lived.
That's pretty big.
It's a big statement, and you can make that argument if you want to. Now,
Michael Jackson was one of these guys that he was very weird, but when he came to perform, there was nobody better at performing.
Well, I don't think he ever disappointed anybody.
Because he never heard a hell of a show on.
Yeah, I never saw him, but I know people that did, and they, you know, you didn't have to be a fan. Okay, he just entertained you.
Yeah,
in the way. So, you mentioned earlier the musical. I want to talk about that a little bit. Okay, on May 15th, 2011. It was announced that Berry Gordy was developing a Broadway musical based on the story of Motown. The show is said to be an account of events in the 1960s and how they shaped the creation of the label. Gordy hoped that the musical would improve the reputation of Motown Records and clear up any misconceptions regarding the label's demise, which there's always stories going around. He wanted to kind of correct the record. So Motown, the musical, began previews at the L'Enfantine Theater in New York City on March 11, 2013, and began regular performances there on April 14th. The musical closed in January of 2015. So it ran for about 2 years. The UK version of
Motown. Excellent. It was excellent. Have you ever seen it? It was like.
I never saw it.
They really relived like the Supreme, the Jackson 5, Marvin Gaye, like all the musicians, the Temptation, like. If you see the show, everybody got their own performance, you know?
Well, if you remember, there was actually some Motown-inspired stuff on Broadway before. Like, remember Dreamgirls?
Oh, yeah.
That was really the Supremes.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't call it that, but that's really what that was based on. But I think he wanted to have his own label, you know?
Yeah, it was good. It lasted a while there, because I remember, I saw it years ago, and it was such a good time.
Right, right. The Motown musical was so popular, it actually opened in the UK in January of 2016. After it closed on Broadway, it went to the UK, and it did very well. Some interesting things about his personal life. He was married and divorced 3 times. He has 8 children with 6 different women. His publishing company, Jobette, was named after his 3 eldest children, Joy, Berry, and Terry. It's like a combination of their names.
Yeah, well, the name Jobette.
Right. He had 3 children with his first wife, Thelma Coleman, whom he married in 1953. They were divorced in 1959. That's Hazel Joy Gordy, Berry Gordy the IV, and Terry James Gordy, those 3 children. Okay. In the spring of 1960, he married Rainoma Mayberry Lyles. They would be divorced in 1964. They had 1 son named Kerry Gordy. With Gina Jackson, Gordy had 1 daughter. That was Sherry Gordy, born May 23rd, 1963. With his then mistress, Margaret Norton, Gordy had a son who would later become more popularly known as Rockwell. I always feel like somebody's watching me.
Yeah, that was a great song.
That was Berry Gordy's son. With his mistress. Okay. That was also on Motown. That's that, I believe. Yeah. Okay. Gordy had a daughter with Motown artist Diana Ross, with whom he had an intimate relationship from 1965 through 1970. That was Rhonda Suzanne, born August 14th, 1971. Her legal father is Robert Ellis Silberstein. Okay, under California law, but that's biologically, right. it's his daughter. Gordy's 8th and youngest child is a son born to Nancy LaVisca. He is known by his stage name Redfoo, as one member of the duo LMFAO. The other member is Skylar Gordy, born August 23rd, 1986, and known professionally as Sky Blue. He is the grandson of Gordy and Thelma Coleman, through their son, Barry the Fourth, and his wife, Valerie Robeson. Barry married Grace Eaton on July 17th, 1990, and they divorced in 93. Like I mentioned earlier, he's related to President Jimmy Carter. His relationship with Carter stems from his white great-grandfather, James Thomas Gordy, who owned a black female slave named Esther Johnson. Okay. Now, there was a sexual assault lawsuit filed against Jermaine Jackson in December 2023 by Rita Barrett, who was the wife of Gordy's best friend, Ben Barrett. He alleged that Gordy assisted in covering up Jackson's sexual assault of her in 1988. Wow. I kind of remember that. I don't think it really went anywhere. I don't recall exactly what happened with that. But basically, I mean, that's all I have for you. I mean, this amazing career, okay, is it's unparalleled, really. I don't think there's really anybody that had a career like this, you know, as far as film, music, starting a label that's groundbreaking, and influencing millions of people and changing music forever. You know, he's a legend.
It's like a little bit overwhelming, man, of all the stuff he did, man. Like, holy, what a career.
There's a few things I left out here too, just out of time.
Dude, but the dude loves to get married.
Hey, well, you know. What do all men love?
I won't say it, but they definitely love getting married.
It's a trap.
It's a trap. It's a trap.
Fish guy. It's a trap.
But he married him. The thing I never realized he was like Jimmy Carter. Like, that's pretty shocking to me.
Yeah.
He had relations to Jimmy Carter, which, like, holy, that blew my mind.
Well, his family was originally from Georgia.
Yeah.
You know?
And they even talk about even the whole slave ownership and stuff, which is also another wow.
Yeah, that stuff went on, and it's part of the whole.
I guess now he's just enjoying retirement, right? Because he doesn't do anything anymore, right?
You don't hear much from him. He's just, I mean, he makes public appearances occasionally, but he's 94 years old, so.
Yeah, so, you know, everything's pretty much limited. He just enjoying his life, you know?
I think Diana Ross just turned like 80 or something, or 81.
Amazing.
Right? I think she's about that. I mean, it's...
Is she the last of the Supreme alive?
Yes.
Because the rest are all dying, right?
Yeah, the rest passed away most recently in the last year or two.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
All right, Mike, thank you for another great show. This is the 195th show of The Rock Show. And let's put another plug for the Son and Sam. You were recently on another podcast. What can you tell me about that?
Yeah, I was on two podcasts, one called Esoteric Atlanta. I was on two times, and one called Aquarius Rising Africa, which is an interesting podcast out of Africa, South Africa, actually. I had to do that podcast at like 8 o'clock in the morning because of the time difference. drag my retired ass out of bed for that. For those who don't know, I did mention in the last show too, you know, we've put our Son of Sam Chronicles podcast on hold, kind of on a shelf, just for the time being. We will do pop-up shows here and there. And what I'm doing right now is I'm being asked to be guests on shows that talk about the Son of Sam murders and anything kind of occult related and things like that. That's kind of what these two shows are. I hope to be on more. I enjoy it. It's nice to be on the other side of the mic. Okay. You know, I do a lot of interviews with Rob, you know, the Rocker Mike and Rob Presents. It's nice to be interviewed as a change and discuss what we know. And, you know, I thank all the fans out there of all the podcasts we do, especially this one. This is the longest running one we have. It's about 5 years now.
Yeah, I was on a few shows too. I was on the Russo van, and then I was both on the Dark Side of Jesus. Tales from the Dark Side.
Tales from the Dark Side. Yes, that's another great podcast.
Everybody. Another great podcast that those guys are doing. They're still doing it, you know?
Yeah, I talk with them once in a while. They got good stuff.
We were also on Hey Bartender.
Hey Bartender, that's right. That's right.
Another one.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of good shows. There's no shortage of good podcasts. There's a lot of crappy ones, too, but you feel through it.
We won't mention who.
If you're watching, all right. Anyway,
but, you think he was one of the guys in the tunnel?
In Brooklyn? Yeah, maybe. Could be. You bet it didn't fall in on him. So, but yes, I just wanted to say, you know, thank you to all the fans that, you know, have given us a little bit of notoriety. We're not big shots. We're just regular guys talking smack, you know, talking about what we enjoy talking about. But it's you guys out there that make it all possible and, you know, gets me to do this research and talk about these things that I like talking about. So I appreciate and thank all the fans.
Mike, I was going to throw something in there too. The other day I had the McDonald's double Big Mac. Four patties.
I heard of this. I have not had it.
I had it, and it is shit, but it's still McDonald's, so it's like the same McDonald's taste.
It just tastes like eating two Big Macs at the same time.
It's like eating two Big Macs. Instead, you still get, like, you get two patties on top, you get the little bread, then the two patties. And you know what? For $7, if you're really hungry, it's totally worth it.
It's $7 just for the sandwich?
Yeah.
That's actually not bad. I thought they were going to charge $17 or something like that.
Dude, if you get the regular Big Mac, it's like $6.50. So yes. For a buck more, you know, you get like the double patty. It's actually, and I got to say, it filled me up.
Hey, if it fills you up, it's got to be good.
You know, so I had it. It was I had somebody call me. Oh, my God, they got the double Whopper.
I tell you what, when I next time I come down to Ibar, I'll go to McDonald's next door. I'll get one. I'll sit there and we should do like a dig in on it.
That's what somebody told me. That we should do a dig in on it. But it's McDonald's. You know, it's going to taste the same everywhere, you know?
Yeah, it's true. It's no difference.
All right, Mike. So if we need to reach you or contact you, where can we find you?
Okay. I answer to many places on social media. If you want to find me on Instagram or X, which used to be Twitter, look under RockerMike212. You want to find me on some of the lesser ones like Getter, Truth Social. Truth Social is big, though. Clout Hub, MeWe, look under RockerMike. There's only one Rocker Mike in that world. If you want to find me on Facebook, where I'm probably most active, you got to look under Rocko Mike, because they won't let me be Rocker Mike. Okay. So Rocko Mike. And then, of course, there's the Rock Show podcast group page, which I encourage you all to join and participate in. It's a lot of fun. We have, you know, song of the day and news and things like that about what's going on. Occasional news about shows. Pictures of Keith Richards doing coke, stuff like that. It's always fun to post, and we encourage your participation. So, what about you, Rob? Where can we find you?
Pretty much in any social media platform: Twitter, which is now X, Instagram, Facebook, and then you can find me at the website, the Getting Lumped Up website that you should check out. It has a lot of pictures and stuff. And it's also got a link to where you can find the show and everywhere else and the YouTube. But if you really like the video, we got 3,000 subscribers. We're trying to get 10,000 subscribers by the end of 2024. So we're working hard on that. Mm-hmm. But if you like the show, you know what? Give us a nice little thumbs up. Subscribe and like, because the more likes we get, the more the show gets out there. We definitely appreciate the support. And this is like the 5th anniversary of the Black History Artist that we do every February to celebrate Black History. And this year, Black History is a day longer with 29 days.
Oh, okay.
That's cool. A leap year year.
It's a leap year. That's right. Yeah. Every election year is a leap year. Have you noticed that?
Yes. No, it's funny because we don't know what the hell's going to happen.
I had an aunt sadly, she passed away, but her birthday was actually February 29th. So, you know, she used to say she was like 5 years old. Yeah.
So when do you celebrate? Do you March 1st or you do the 28th? I guess it's
I think they celebrated on the 28th.
Oh, yeah?
I think they did, if I remember right. Yeah, it was a long time ago.
That's very interesting.
Yeah. So,
people, remember, don't get drunk.
Get lumped up.
And we'll see you real soon.
Take care, people.
Get lumped up tonight. Listen to Rob Ross and Young Rock of Mine on the only podcast that I'll hear that won't make me wanna rip off my